There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, distinguished colleagues, welcome to hour number two of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. We continue this Election Day runoff for the primary coverage. Also talk about some national and international stories. I know President Trump is going to speak shortly and talk about what was said yesterday in Helsinki. Let's get more on all that. And joining the group here, of course, Jeff Poore in the studio will be on with us tonight for our election coverage starting at 8. Plus Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com joins us right now. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. How y'all doing?
Doing good. Although I'm pretty upset. In that last segment of the first hour, Jeff was talking to me about how tight this race is for Alvin Holmes today in the runoff. And I got to tell you, my show will fall apart if I don't have Alvin Holmes to use as a foil. So I don't know what I can do to help Alvin Holmes win in the primary.
You know, I think having Holmes quotes is part and parcel of Alabama media, so that'd be a shame if he lost.
Right. We need him. Let's talk about that and the statewide races today. What do you see? I mean, first of all, I guess we're going to put you down, as we have the rest of us, on where you think the turnout will be today. Secretary of State John Merrill, I think, had it in the teens, like either 16 or 18%. I don't have it in front of me. What about you? What's your take on it?
I think he's being optimistic. I don't think people are super excited about this. This is not a motivating set of races. They're important, don't get me wrong, but keep in mind, we are talking about the lieutenant governor's race, which until this race had really been kind of a throwaway, not a race most people cared about. The attorney general's race, obviously that's very significant, but you have Troy King and the guy Bentley appointed. That's what this boils down to. So in terms of a motive for people to show up and say, hey, I'm really excited about that, I just don't see it. You'll have the diligent who vote regardless, but otherwise, this is going to be, I think, a real light turnout. And it, frankly, especially at the top of the ticket, two pretty tight races, if I had to say, guess.
You know, Jeff was talking about this in the last segment, that gives places like Marshall County outsized influence, and even Baldwin County, because we have some pretty contentious local races going on here, that there's some extra motivation to show up and vote today, because more localized.
Well, and I think I told a couple of folks who asked me about how I thought about the options on the ballot. I said, in some instances, it's like saying, well, do you want a sharp stick in your left eye or your right eye? It's not motivating. I mean, people are looking at this and saying, hey, for example, I like Twinkle Cavanaugh. I like Will Ainsworth. They're good folks. But, like, both of them have had some challenges. And then, man, when you look at the attorney general's race, neither one really excites me and says, hey, this is the best path forward for essentially restoring confidence in law enforcement in Alabama again. I just don't see it. It's a good choice.
You've got to think the cost per vote in this race, with just the money thrown at it, is going to be off the charts with such a low turnout, and the ad waves have just been bombarded. There's been carpet bombing down here and in other parts of the state. Is that going to move the needle at all? Does anybody, you know, is there any way you get a bump from any of that?
Well, I mean, I would say probably, but in what I'm seeing here and what I'm hearing from normal Alabamians across the state is, this is annoying. I'm tired of people running ads and calling my house and trashing each other. The idea that, I mean, I thought it was hilarious that Twinkle basically tries to act like Ainsworth is a convict. He's not. Like, people know Will Ainsworth and know that he's a gentleman of character. And sure, whatever happened in college, I frankly don't care. But then the response is, well, I'm going to get a boat and a fiberglass tiger. And, I mean,
well, if you're trying to get attention, if the word is to get yourself in the news cycle, to have Jeff Poor and Cameron Smith talking about you and tweeting about you, that accomplishes it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, heck yeah. But, I mean,
Well, what would the appropriate response for him have been? I mean, if he's not going to confront it with this sort of ridiculous tack, then what would your... If you were Cameron Smith, campaign manager for Will Ainsworth, what should that have been, you think?
Well, first of all, as an Alabama fan, the Tiger thing just makes me feel uncomfortable. But that notwithstanding, I get the idea of a silly response. But, I mean, I thought... having that letter that he showed that said, hey, look, see, I have no criminal record here, that was really sufficient in my mind to say, look, she's lying.
But it got no attention.
Right, and I can agree with where Jeff's going.
There's no traction, right?
Right. I mean, we had, now, when Will Ainsworth was on with us last week, I looked at the text line emails, we did have people go, holy cow, that's all this was about. But you know what? That's a subset of the state of Alabama. The people that, you know, heard that, it's almost like with so few days between then and today, you know, what do you do to get everybody to pay attention who's been, you know, heard the ad and said, okay, well, then this person is a career criminal who's running for lieutenant governor.
Right. And that's the 2 week, I mean, there's basically a 2 week rule in campaigns that if you have things in the cycle 2 weeks out, it's really hard for anybody to respond inside that window. It's just hard to get stuff up and out. I think Ainsworth has done a decent job pushing back. I'm just saying that it's not something we should make light of in politics, because ultimately this is the kind of misleading. And even if you say, well, there's some basis in truth, I don't want to play these games. These games are dumb. They hurt the state. They hurt our politics on the national level. We see this all the time. And this kind of hyperbole, it erodes confidence in people whose jobs are really important.
All right, having both of y'all on the phone, this is good, because Supermom on the text line says, what are y'all thinking about Steve Marshall's chances? So, you know, let's go from lieutenant governor to the attorney general's race. Obviously, a big deal for the state. AG is a big part of, number one, law enforcement inside the state, plus, you know, fighting this, you know, redistricting battle going forward, all these kind of things that are really important beyond the borders of Alabama. So, Steve Marshall, Troy King, who is it?
Like, you know, Troy King to me feels like kind of like the MySpace of attorney generals. Like, we've been there, we've done that, and there's something kind of off-putting about him. It was good when it first came out, but Steve Marshall's less known, and I think just for that reason, I think he gets a little bit of an edge for that over Troy King.
I don't know, Cameron. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll take the opposite approach. I think that the name ID gives Troy King the edge. And what did we see? I've written about this, and I've basically drawn the parallel to the race in the Republican primary runoff with Roy Moore and Luther Strange. I think that's very analogous to this AG's race. And when you have that grassroots contingent...
So you're saying Troy King, let me stop. For, so Troy yeah. King is Roy Moore. Steve Marshall is Luther Strange.
Yep.
Okay. Well, Roy Moore had a cause, like the Ten Commandments and all that nonsense. What is Troy King's cause? Like, it's, we like dog tracks. I don't know.
Well, sure. But, I mean, it's less. I don't think that Roy Moore's cause in this less cycle. Yeah, that was the Ten Commandments. Some of that stuff previously was certainly his cause. But he was appealing to a grassroots contingent, and they showed up and they voted. And I think that that's the danger here for Marshall, is that a lot of sort of, let's call them just rank and file Republicans who think Troy Moore is the MySpace candidate, or Troy Moore.
I love it.
Troy King.
No, I love Troy
yeah.
Moore.
I've now combined
Troy
them.
Troy Moore. I love
who
it.
Who think he's that MySpace candidate, just stay at home. They say, Steve Marshall's got it. And the Troy King voters, I think, more and more, I think they're going to show up. And I think that's going to be a real challenge for Marshall in a low turnout election.
All right, let's do this. We'll run the break and come back because I want to shift gears now. And something you've been talking about on social media, I know that Jeff has as well. And I think, majority of people that are in any way engaged in the national political cycle talking about President Trump's speech yesterday or his presser after the meeting with Putin. And did he do the right thing? Did he step in it? There sure are, and forget about the Democrats, forget about the liberals, there sure are a lot of conservative voices taking umbrage with President Trump. We'll get the take from Jeff and from Cameron when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 122 FM Talk, 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Hey, coming up tonight, too, 8 o'clock tonight, continuing discussion and coverage of today's midterm runoff in the primary going on today. We will start tallying up the numbers and talking about those at 8 o'clock. We're live from 8 to 10 tonight right here on FM Talk 106.5. Also, a reminder, I was discussing this yesterday and somebody texted in and said, really, they're that good, Sullivan? Yeah, they are. And I'm talking about the grilled chicken tenders at Goldfinger's on Dolphin Street. Now, they're just as good at Saraland, I'm sure, because the same company. I've just not been to the Saraland location. I have been to the Dolphin Street location. And as I'm trying to do better and better, Jeff can attest, I'm drinking my water in here, doing my stuff, trying to get a little healthier. I do love fried chicken of any sort, fingers or with the bone or all that kind of stuff. But as I'm trying to do better, I'm choosing the grilled. And often you'll go to a place that has fried chicken and has the grilled option, and it's just, it's just like the fried chicken's great and the grilled is blah. It's like no flavor, kind of pasty. Different story at Goldfinger's. Number one, it looks, you know, fantastic with the grill marks and the whole nine. Really grilled, not pre-grilled and heated up. Really grilled. And the seasonings are really, really tasty. And for a second, you forget the fact that you do so dearly love fried food and you enjoy those grilled. But listen, the fried chicken fingers are fantastic. Check out the hamburgers, the salads there, the catering they do. The corn nuggets that are there are fantastic. A whole bunch of stuff for you to check out. But if you're like me, trying to do a little bit better on the health side, check them out on Dolphin Street. It is Goldfinger's, and go grilled. Tell me if I'm right on that. The best grilled chicken I've had in town. All right, continue our discussion about what's happening today here in Alabama and then what's happening nationally as Jeff Poore's in studio and Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com joins us as well. And let's get into it because this has started I said going into the break, let me discount. I don't care what Chuck Schumer had to say. I don't care what the regular liberal voices had to say about the president's presser yesterday with Putin in Helsinki. But it does strike me when a lot of voices from, one of the hosts on our station, Laura Ingraham, other voices from Fox News, Newt Gingrich, people have said that was not the best showing yesterday for President Trump and his speech and his, picking sides between the U.S. intelligence bureaus and Putin. What's your take on this, Cameron?
I think that it was terrible. I mean, I'll just say it flatly. I mean, I'm a Reagan conservative who, look, I want to have as good a relationship as we can with any nation in the world. Don't get me wrong there. But extolling the virtues of somebody like Putin, who frankly doesn't share any of our values, he is not a friendly of the things we care about. It's a huge problem for me. And the fact that the Republicans are sort of sitting around being what I would call sort of Soviet apologists is absolutely beyond the pale. And it drives me insane that we would sort of say, oh, well, Trump kind of likes playing patty cake with Putin or North Korea or these other folks. So I guess it's okay. It's not. He's wrong. And that doesn't mean that I'm a globalist or a liberal. I'm taking a page out of Reagan's playbook and saying, hey, we don't mess around when it comes to people who are our adversaries in many core respects.
All right, Jeff, your take on this.
Well, what does it mean? I mean, if he goes and does this and it upsets a lot of people, what tangible are we giving up? Is it just a symbolic gesture that, hey, we support Putin? I don't think that was the message. I just think that he didn't come out and wasn't as outspoken as he was about some of the stuff Putin has done and the way to handle that. Okay, that's a fair criticism. But the way it's being turned, it's being treated like it's the end of the world, that this is just a straight up treasonous act, that this is sort of a...
The left is calling it, but, you know, I mean, he could have said it was national,
puppy
dog day, and it would be a treasonous act. But why the voices I just listed there, some pretty, not wishy-washy conservatives, why would they? And not even established... Look at the Newt Gingrich, right? I mean, why does he come out and say what he does?
Well, because it could have been handled better. I don't think this was a good thing.
Okay,
by any means.
All right, fair.
But
that's
I don't
fair. That's
think
fair.
That this is as bad as it's being made out to be. Because tell me what changed between yesterday, this time 2 days ago, and now because of this press conference. I don't think anything's really changed. I think everything's the same, and this is just a lot of smoke where there's no fire.
Cameron?
Well, I think that this is just sloppy. I mean, I expect leadership out of the President of the United States, and words do matter. The notion that this is like, it's a nothing burger. Well, no, it's not a nothing burger. I mean, when the President gets up there and is asked point blank, hey, there's credible evidence that Russia meddled in the elections, and Trump's basically like, nah, everything's okay, and then kind of goes on this wandering ramble, and then blames the tension between America and Russia on American stupidity. He tweeted that before any of this stuff happened. That is not leadership. That is not a nothing burger. I don't think it's treason. I think it's bad diplomacy. This was not I don't think he was prepared. This seemed very much off the cuff. Like, hey, I'm going to have this meeting. We're going to just do it. And I'm going to wing it. This is not the kind of meeting you wing. And frankly, we don't need to be mean to Putin. We don't need to be attacking. But we definitely don't need to sort of dismiss what we're finding out about how Russia engaged the United States. And I think what's happening is President Trump is conflating two things. He's saying, I didn't do anything wrong. Therefore, Russia didn't do this other stuff. Well, those two are not mutually exclusive. I don't think there's been any credible evidence that Trump did anything illegal or worthy of impeachment related to Russia. That doesn't mean that there's not a huge body of evidence that Russia was really trying to monkey with our politics. And that, to me, is the bigger problem than anything related to Trump's impeachment or treason or anything like that.
Let me offer a third choice, a choice C here. We'll see if it bears out anything. What if the deliverable, remember that was the discussion going into the what deliverables there were in these negotiations? What if the deliverable for Putin, what we could give Putin, was face, was giving him something to strut about right back home? And then in exchange for that, it moves the discussion, moves whatever we're trying to work out here forward. What if what he wanted was not, you know, these prisoners or this bank account or something? It was make me look good like I do on horse with no shirt. You know, what if?
That's what I want to know.
I want the American president to say that it was not our fault. You know, he wanted to do that, and in exchange, then behind in the KGB clown car he's in, he says, "Listen, we will do this other thing. You just make me look good." I mean, could that be a negotiation tactic?
I mean, it's hypothetical, but what?
Of course, it's ridiculous too, but I do these things.
Do you really think American standing in the world has been diminished because of this?
Cameron?
On a reasonable level, maybe on the margins, I don't know, you can make that argument. What has changed that makes this such an egregious thing?
No, I think that we're looking at the cumulative effect here. I mean, this is what's concerned me, is that we've absolutely thumped our allies. We've pursued a trade agenda that's garbage policy. We've tried this before. It has failed. Bush tried it. It was bad economic policy. But yet Trump says, nah, we'll ignore history. We'll engage in we'll make basically a very weak national security argument, throw tariffs all over the place. I'll go to NATO and slap our allies around a little bit. And then, oh, by the way, I'm going to stand on the stage with Putin and basically be an apologist and say, basically, he's a pretty good guy making outstanding offers. The cumulative effect of that absolutely diminishes us on the world stage. It's not leadership. And that's not coming from somebody who's wants to see this progressive globalist, America's just another country among many.
We got to jump. We're right at the break. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 136 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Election Day. Yeah, reminder, it is Election Day Tuesday, and we'll have full coverage coming up tonight at 8 o'clock. We are live from 8 to 10 tonight. Jeff Poore will be in with us, and Dale Jackson going to check in from North Alabama, and we may round up other indigents off the streets of any of the 67 counties of Alabama, put them on the air as well with us this evening. So be part of that starting at 8 o'clock tonight right after Armed Alabama. We continue our discussion as well with Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com. And this is good because there is a if we could only have turned the mics on during the news break there, y'all would have heard a very robust and you know what, two heavyweights here battling it out about Trump's policies. And I want to go ahead and get back to what we were saying. We're talking about, if you're just joining us, talking about the president's presser with Putin after the meeting in Helsinki and what the president said. Now, Jeff, I'm paraphrasing kind of what you're saying. Does it much matter? Did the standing of the United States change after yesterday?
I mean, I think this is American foreign policy under Trump. It's what if this was a negotiating tactic that he's shown palling around with Putin to get back at the EU, who's a much bigger trading partner and a much more integral part of the American economy than anything Russia is, right? So, I mean, like, the EU's playing hardball. What if this is a tactic to play hardball with them? And why shouldn't we play hardball with the European Union? I mean, the whole formation of the European Union in the first place was to kind of be a counterbalance to the United States and trade. They gang up on us, and that's the idea. What is the appropriate response to dealing with the European Union if it's not doing what we're doing?
All right, and Cameron, you were saying, really to surmise here, that's no way to treat your allies and treat your enemies, right?
Yeah, well, the bottom line is I hear Jeff on the attitude. Like, he's actually right. Like, Americans are tired of this notion that, you know, we're just one of many nations. We just need to shut up and let the masters of the universe conduct things. Like, I agree with that tone and that issue in terms of that's where the people are. And I don't blame folks for that. But we need our allies globally. I mean, American leadership is not just a fun thing. It's something that protects our interest. And frankly, it leads the way internationally. The idea that, hey, a republic, people who govern themselves, who have civil liberties, are the most powerful nation in the world, is a real beacon of hope for a lot of people. And we can't lose sight of that. And I mean, I get it, America first. I just don't want it to wind up being America alone.
Well, and is there that, you know, we talked about this during the news break, is there that danger? I said I offered the, well, you know, even if you rough them up a little bit, where are they going to go? You know, are they going to run off and make an allegiance with China? I think that would be a big stretch. So that whole, you know, well, you do what you want because they have nowhere else to go. We often talk about it in politics. You know, this candidate can say whatever at this point because those voters are going to show up anyway for them. But in this case, maybe they don't break rank now, but you're saying it could be the seeds of division down the road.
Well, yeah, I mean, and right now they don't have a better option. I get that notion of, like, they're not going to run into the, you know, open arms of China or Russia, but at some point they got to say, wait a minute, this isn't a good deal for us. Like, you know, we thought we had a good relationship, that we were really allies, but can we trust America when we do have a conflict with Russia, when we do have a conflict with China? I'm not saying put their interest in front of ours. I'm simply saying that our interests are served when we are a global leader.
But we've heard that for years and years and years. But then how do you tell that to somebody in one of these hollowed out Rust Belt towns? How do you tell that to somebody that's lost their job because of these sort of trade policies? This is the whole rise of the whole Trump phenomenon in the first place. That, well, we've tried to, you know, lead through this sort of, like, we're the good example. Let's lead through our example and be the right example. That doesn't put food on the table. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't solve the problem of the hollowed out manufacturing sector in our economy. I don't know that you can make the case that what Trump's doing by being a little tougher with these guys, that that's necessarily the wrong thing. I think a lot of people wanted that, and that's why they voted for this guy.
Yeah, well, I mean, the difference is, Jeff, you're advocating the AFL-CIO's trade policy. I'm advocating a free market conservative trade policy.
Well, when is it ever appropriate to go retaliatory with tariffs? When is it ever appropriate? If China, Japan, all these other places are going to impose tariffs on our products, do we not have what is the appropriate response to that? Just keep on letting them do that or impose our own tariffs? No one's ever given me a good answer to that.
You're looking at the wrong thing here. Like, take Canadian milk tariffs. Like, they were, like, very, very high. I think, like, 270%. Well, what happens when we put a tariff on imports is that we pay the tax, Americans. The companies that are selling back in are not saying, hey, well, we'll just eat that tax. We'll eat the tariff and we'll sell at the same price point. What happens is the price point goes up. So this is not a trade tax on Canada. It's a trade tax on Americans buying milk.
Well, if the Americans are buying milk from milk producers in the United States, doesn't that have a positive economic impact for us?
In terms of the fact that the milk producer makes more money because it artificially inflates prices?
Well, wouldn't the appropriate thing be to get them to remove their unfair trade practices? And the only leverage you really had to do that is to put, you know, respond, fight fire with fire. So what my question to you is, then what do we do? Do we just kind of let it go and just assume that they'll find religion eventually? Or what is the appropriate response?
Well, I mean, fighting fire with fire, we can watch the whole world burn. I mean, if the notion that if this worked, if this tactic works, then I'll be the first one to say, oh, well, we're going to take off our tariffs and they've taken off their tariffs.
What is the appropriate response when the tariffs are one-sided is my question.
The appropriate response is multilateral trade agreements that deal with all of this stuff, that open access to markets all over the place.
But we tried that with NAFTA.
But let me throw in here that is what Americans felt like have been, to talk about, not the art of the deal. That has been the bad deals, and those multilateral trade agreements have not benefited the average American. They benefited absolutely certain groups, certain businesses, but not everyday Americans.
Sure, but that's not borne out in the economics, like what actually happened. Like, NAFTA has generated immense amounts of wealth. Yeah, I'll be the first to say, when you open up competition in markets and have free trade, there are businesses that previously enjoyed less competition who are going to say, man, this is not good for us. And I understand that and I hear that, but markets change over time. The idea of stifling, controlling, and protecting markets is not conservative. This is not a free market economy type model. The idea of, well, we're really free market except for when it comes to the world.
The state of Alabama.
We can't play by two sets of rules. You have a free market in the United States. You don't have a free market in the Far East. That's, if the whole globe were free market, this your theory would work. Absolutely. It's the best way to go. That's never going to happen, though. If you look inward, you're never going to get the right people, just the way Washington is constituted with all the lobbying and the special interest.
Sure.
You're never going to get the perfect free trade agreement where you can gang up on one of these bad actors. And if you do multilateral agreements, well, who's to say these other participants in these multilateral agreements aren't going to want some sweeteners in their pot that's going to make some for some unfair trade practices here? I just think that you've got to look out for your own interest, and what's the best way to do that? No one's ever really given me a good answer beyond the tariffs.
I'll give you a very clear, direct answer. There are WTO sanctions. It's completely reasonable when people engage in unfair trade practices like China and dumping steel. Like, we need to go after them. We need to say, no, you are being a bad actor. You are engaging in unfair trade practices. I'm absolutely for enforcing fair trade and what we'll call good deals. At the same time, just saying, well, the answer is, well, we need to fight fire with fire. Well, what we're seeing is an inferno. They're seeing this is not working. In fact, what's happening is other nations, instead of removing their tariffs, are adding more, or sort of saying, well, we're going to up the ante. And from a global economic standpoint, which also impacts America. The notion that these two are separate is ridiculous. That's bad economics. I'm not saying we have to have bad deals. We just have other mechanisms to enforce bad trade practices.
All right, I want to do this. I want to up against the break. I want to take one call here, and we'll go to, let's see if we work this out, because we are, and somebody commenting on Twitter, thank you for the compliments on the audio. We are using four or five different sources right now, so let's go to one more in the mix. Kevin on the phone is in Mobile. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, enjoying the conversation. You know, the whole thing is like, you know, the president's actually calling these people out. You know, with World Trade Organization and all the bad deals that NAFTA we've had for the last 15 or 20 years, you know, it's finally, it's coming home to roost right here. We've got to shore this up to where it's finally in the Americans' favor and in the taxpayers' favor. If we look at the trade deficits we have with these countries and these organizations here, you know, we're doing everything. What if we went in and said, hey, gee, you know what we're going to do? We've done this for so long. We're going to pull our troops out now. That's where the proof's in the pudding. They say, well, you can't do that. You've been protecting us for the last 50 years. Exactly. That's where it's at. And what he's doing is he's calling their bluff here.
All right. And I want to let the men react to that as well. Cameron, you first up.
Sure. I mean, I'll make this very simple. What's your trade deficit with Amazon? I mean,
they're winning. They're winning against my house.
What's your trade deficit with Amazon?
Yeah, they've been winning.
Which way does the money go? I mean, my family's trade deficit with Amazon is quite huge. I sell them virtually nothing. They sell me a ton of stuff. And so when you look at it from a debt standpoint, that's the wrong way to look at it. Our national debt is actual debt. A trade deficit is basically, when we look at the entire globe, like flows of stuff. And the idea that we buy lots of cheap inputs from other countries to, I don't know, make your cell phone and other things like that, that's actually in our favor. It gets us a lot of things we want at price points we want them. And so we can change that. We can rebalance things. But what you're really saying is, I don't want you buying those cheap inputs because they're not buying stuff from us. Well, if they don't want to buy stuff from us, that's a decision, a purchasing decision for them. We can't force them to buy. So the only thing we can really do is say, we won't buy. And that to me is really, I mean, it's wrongheaded. It's a misunderstanding of economics. And, you know, it shows a lot of people, just think about your own personal trade deficits. And then this is just a lot bigger example of that.
Well, here's the problem with that. Yeah, you have a trade deficit with Amazon, let's say. But if Amazon started jacking up prices and they kept going up and up and up and up, you would just go to Walmart or Target or some other places. In a lot of these instances, you don't have that option. You don't have another non-Amazon option. You have China making all these things, and they're making their own rules as they go along. So the problem, I think...
Sure, I have plenty of options. I have Singapore. I have the whole globe,
but
Jeff.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily on everything. That's not true. China is a manufacturing powerhouse, and they want to put tariffs on stuff that we make, or they want to make it where we can't sell our products in China or Japan.
Then China is not the only input market we buy from.
Well, I'm not... But I'm just saying, it's not always that easy. There's times when they could do stuff that affects the whole economy, because they have such power that, you know, and they engage in these unfair trade practices because they have all this leverage. What is our appropriate response other than saying, well, that's just the nature of supply and demand? I don't think that that's true.
It's not the nature of supply and demand. We don't want to buy that stuff at that price point.
Right, because there's not another option. There's not another supply, right?
Right, and free markets work. So if they jacked up the price point, if they created a price point on, we'll call them widgets, where the widgets were just too expensive and we were paying through the nose, you know what? Somebody else in Singapore, in Mexico, in Guatemala is going to say, you know what? I can beat that price point, and I'm going to make widgets. And so that's how markets work. Markets don't stop working just because we get on the global stage.
But they do things to make it unfair. They're playing by their own set of rules. They're devaluing their currency. They're also not opening their markets up to us. We should have a response to that. And there's not, what is the appropriate response other than say we're going to go to Singapore and leave China hung out? Where would they have all our debt?
We have World Trade Organization sanctions. There are international agreements that allow us to use those.
How are those working out? I mean, there's still the imbalance. They're still dumping cheap steel in the market. But they're not. They're not as effective. They're not an effective tool. Well, they are effective to some degree, I'm sure, but they're not effective enough, I would say, to make the economy more of a fair playing field. I just, you know, I'm not saying that tariffs are the best way, but I do think there's a time where it's appropriate.
All right, gentlemen, listen, this is great, and a lot of great response from people out there. I appreciate it, because I've enjoyed listening to y'all talk about this as well. So will we get down the road in another couple of weeks past today's vote, and of course the latest hubbub for the president. We'll have this discussion again, because it's what I'm fascinated in. Cameron Smith, R Street Institute and AL.com. As always, enjoyed the conversation. People want to reach out to you more on this. Where do they go?
You can find me at D. Cameron Smith on Twitter at al.com/opinion. And I want to thank Jeff. I mean, this has been a really robust discussion about a really important policy issue. So thanks, man.
Hey, thanks to both of y'all. And we're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. And Jeff, by the way, will be stuck here hanging out with us at FM Talk 106.5 on through 10 o'clock tonight. Part of live broadcast 8 to 10 with election information as it comes in and analysis. 8 to 10 tonight right here on FM Talk 106.5. Head to the news break, and then we're coming right back to wrap it up before Feinbaum, who's at SEC Media Days.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we have just a second, too, and this probably won't go to the audio right now because we're about to head to Feinbaum. Maybe we'll get a link up on our Facebook page, Dalton, as the president is addressing the nation. The White House speaking about the comments he made in Helsinki. I put this on Twitter just a couple minutes ago, as the president's basically backing away from what was said there at the presser. Let's see. AP reporting, President Trump claims he misspoke on election meddling. Now says he sees no reason why it wouldn't be Russia that was responsible. All right. So, I mean, it's not a straight 180, but there's something to it. There's also, as the president's basically backing away from, he said, the president says, I accept U.S. intelligence agencies' conclusions on Russian meddling. That part of it's, I think, pretty significant. As he yesterday called into question the meddling issue here, and now, as of just minutes ago.
Well, to be fair, after the Peter Stokes stuff and all the stuff that's come from that, why wouldn't he be skeptical of the intelligence community?
Right, but then I got to play this game because, you know, I can't keep everybody happy. Either yesterday he was BSing us or today he's BSing us.
I think today's BSing us.
All right, there you go. See, there it is. I like that take. All right, because it's got to be one or the other. And we'll pick this conversation up in amongst conversation about the election going on today when we return at 8 tonight. Y'all don't miss it. Be here with us 8 tonight for coverage right here on FM Talk 106.5. Feinbaum is in Atlanta. It's SEC Media Days next.